Welcome to Between Sundays. I'm Tyler, and I see you and I hear you, friend of the pod. Today, we're talking about the story of Hagar and Lehi Roy. Dave Rodriguez is here to discuss what we do when we have no resolution to our pain. But now that the Lord has heard me in my misery, let's welcome in our favorite ubiquitous presence of pain and suffering, Maren and Dave. Good day, guys.
Good day.
Good day.
Dave's
Tyler.
Back.
Yay.
Welcome back, Dave.
Thanks. Good to be back.
Your honorary host. No Barry.
Wait, you actually named me an honorary host?
Yeah. Yeah.
Honorary host.
Wow. We're all carrying this equally this week.
Okay.
Honorary host, semi-retired.
Yeah.
We're still debating that.
Yeah. There are a couple things about this past weekend. We'll get into that in a minute. But there are a couple things that you pointed out, Dave, that I think it's worth noting. One, that's not probably how Hagar looked.
The little icon.
No. Yeah, a little cartoon.
The little cartoon
it's like
of
a
Hagar.
60-year-old woman.
She looked like a soccer grandma.
Yeah. And number two, every time it said Dave Rodriguez, founding pastor, retired, you were like, I'm not retired.
No.
I'm not retired.
That'd be a heck no.
Yeah. Yeah. So we gotta tighten that up a little bit. But guys, what's new? What's happening?
Grace Kids Camp.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It
so
is.
We it are is. Day, where we're recording this on day one of Grace Kids Camp. This will come out on day three. So Maren may or may not be like, in the fetal position by the time this comes out, but we're in day one. How's everybody feeling?
Pumped. Yeah. This morning went really well. I mean, you practice and you prepare at least.
Heck
the students. I don't know if people are aware, but like we've got a whole team of students leading the kids in worship.
Yeah.
So we've been practicing over the last couple of weeks and
oh yeah,
all comes down to this morning, you know? And I had one of the students look at me and say, she was in The Little Mermaid. And she said, I'm more nervous right
about
now
this?
About these kids than I am, than I was for the whole show.
Well, you're more exposed.
Yeah, maybe that's what
for
it
this.
Is.
It's like
but the kids
seven
are so
kids
forgiving.
On stage.
You know, they just want to dance and yell yeah. and shake their fists in the air and yeah. have fun and jump. Yeah, just all energy. Pure
yeah.
energy.
The place looks great. If a friend of the pod, if you haven't been, or if you're not going to be around the week of kids camp, the place looks great. It looks like a castle. Looks like a...
Yes.
Like a medieval.
Shout out to Rich Stolt. I heard yeah.
he built
the castle that's
experience.
In the lobby.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Those kids are loving that.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
awesome.
So kids camp is like, it used to be, we were just talking about this. It used to be the week where vacations got scheduled in my life. It's like, there's a lot of noise, a lot of like stuff going on. Obviously there's 400 kids in the building.
Yeah.
And so like, that's perfect time for me to just go to Florida or something, you know, like, but Milo is going to be 5 next month. So he gets to do stuff now. He's,
yeah.
he's part of the party. And so it is cool. Like being around and like in the lobby, hanging out, checking kids in. And I get to, my role this week is I get to check Milo in. Like I'm checking in the 4-year-olds. And so seeing all the little kids come in and
you and I did that last
yeah,
year.
Yeah, we did that last year. I'm doing it again. I was a hit last year. They're bringing me back, bringing me back. Yeah. So Maren, what are you doing for kids camp?
I am helping to lead the kid worship in like their breakout sessions. We have 2 different sessions in the morning, one for 3rd through 5th graders. Mm-hmm. All with music and acting and drama and the whole shebang. And then another one, 10 minutes later, we have to turn it all around in 10 minutes. And then we do pre-K through second
How
grade.
Is this going to happen?
Well, it happened,
yeah.
let me tell you. But yeah, just all the singing and the dancing and the
yeah.
leading of the worship. Yep.
Yeah. And yep. they're going to be front and center this coming weekend.
Yeah, they'll be featured.
Yeah.
So you don't want to be late for church this coming Sunday. This is the Sunday
the
to be on time. Don't miss the kids.
Yeah,
yeah they're so excited.
You know what's extraordinary is lots of things have come and gone over my lifetime, but Vacation Bible School is the one thing
I
that
know.
Has
we were
yes.
just talking about that. Yeah.
I mean, for
we
dozens and dozens of years that
yeah.
I can remember. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think it's a better experience now than it was when I was a kid. It just like hit me an hour ago. Maren said something about rolling. What would you say? Like when we were in camp, we would count nickels.
Well, no. Yeah. So every day there's a different like giving objective.
Like donation.
They're raising money for the In His Steps organization. Right. But they told the kids to bring nickels tomorrow.
Oh.
And I'm like, who has nickels anymore? Who's just walking around with a pocket full of change?
Yeah.
And that's, I said nickels.
Yeah. And I said, that just unlocked a memory that I completely forgot, like blocked out of my mind. When I went to VBS, we would like, one of the crafts was like rolling pennies. Like we would bring pennies and nickels and dimes. And we, part of our time at camp was like putting those in the like paper rolls.
Yeah.
Camp's way better now.
When yeah. I went,
that was terrible.
For sure.
When I went to vacation Bible school, I always won the like bring the most friends award. Like,
oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. It was like, who can bring the most friends? Well, yeah. I always brought the most friends. Yeah. And I had the choice of a brand new bike or
don't act like you're a big shot
or a 5 foot Rice Krispie treat. Oh. And I chose the Krispie treat, all five feet of it, all five delicious
5 feet.
Shut up.
Delicious oblong feet of Rice Krispie treat.
You that chose that over the bike? Summer.
Oh, easily. Give me the Rice Krispie treats every time. Wow. Noodles and Company. They have the best Rice Krispie treats. Oh, they do.
They actually, yeah. Is that where it was from?
No, but that's where my current favorite Rice Krispie treat
lives. They have good ones.
It's the size of my face.
Yeah, it's big. All right. Yeah. Dave, what's new with you?
While you're all enjoying
Grace,
the kids camp, I was at the eye doctor all morning. So that was
what's wrong?
It's a long story. I just had to get my eyes
checked. Thanks for bringing it up.
Yeah. No, I just had to get them.
Are you okay?
I'm fine. Okay, just had to get a new contact lens. And it's just, and then I would have been there. I would have been gone a long time ago, except they had to call my insurance company to find out if my contacts are medically necessary, which they are because I have an eye disorder.
Mm. Oh.
But 45 minutes later, as they sat on the phone waiting, I said, you know what? I'll just pay for it. Walked out. So that was my morning.
Yeah.
It was all exciting.
Right. How long have you needed glasses?
Since I was in high school.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And come to find out, and I didn't know this actually to today, that what I have is a DNA disorder. I have a genetic disorder. That's why my eyes are, so I have to wear contacts and glasses.
Oh.
Oh, my.
At the same time.
I've never heard of such a thing.
I do.
What? Does anyone else in your family have that?
Nope. It's a recessive gene. That's what I was told today. After now 6-7 years old, and I find out.
No wonder.
No one's told me before. I thought it was just from rubbing my eyes. But it's not.
Okay, so what if you don't wear one? Like, what if you decide, you're not wearing your glasses right now?
Yeah, they're just for reading.
Okay.
Yeah, so I can look fine in the distance with just my contact lenses in. But if I want to read or look at my notes while I'm preaching my sermon, I have to wear glasses.
Hmm.
Little known fact.
Have you done the whole LASIK thing? Like, is that?
Can't do it. Not with my disease.
No.
Disorder. It's not a disease. It's a disorder. Can't do it.
So we can edit this out if it's inappropriate. But is this why you chose to preach with the wrong Bible translation over the weekend?
Wrong?
I don't know.
We're
it's
using
not wrong.
The word wrong?
Penny Rodriguez, nothing escapes her. And so in the lobby yesterday on Sunday, she came up to me and she said, hey, just so you know, the app is wrong. All of Dave's scripture references don't match the scripture references in the app. And I was like, oh man, yeah, I noticed that too. I'm going to go take a look. And then last night at like 9:30 PM, she texted me. She said, it was Dave's fault all along.
Yes. It absolutely was, because when I got home, she made that clear to me that that was what was going on. There's a reason for that. It's because when I was working on the sermon, I downloaded the passage into my notes. And so I accidentally had downloaded the wrong version into my notes.
Probably NIV.
No, I think it was the NIV or US NIV version or something. But so at any rate, and when did I realize it? 15 minutes before we started the service.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what she said. She's like, it's all Dave's fault. And I go, how did you realize that? And she said, he said he realized it right before he started preaching.
Nice. Yeah, I was reading my Bible, which I brought the appropriate Bible, and I was reading. I'm like, this is not what I studied.
Wow.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
There were no major changes.
Oh, okay. Man.
That's funny.
I thought it was really interesting, though, the NLT used both words to describe Hagar, one as servant and one as slave. So let's just stick with what it was.
Yeah.
She was slave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
How is being grandpa again? You've got a new baby.
Yeah. We have
granddaughter.
Granddaughter Piper.
Yeah.
Congratulations. I love that name, by the way.
Piper Cecile. She's a beautiful little girl. It's great.
Yeah.
Awesome. Love it.
We were talking, it's like, I don't have a daughter, but my first niece, the first girl, was born into my family.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen her yet, but I imagine I'm going to be like more careful or something, even though a boy baby is the same, like delicate wise.
Yeah.
But I feel like because she's a girl, I have to be like,
careful. I would like to be able to say that I didn't feel it, but I did.
Yeah. Mm.
And also she's teeny. She's like not quite 6 pounds.
Yeah.
So she's a little thing. And I remember when Henry was born, even when he was teeny, I would refer to him as buddy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not the case.
No, not here.
It's sweetheart all the time.
Yeah,
that's right. Which is great.
That is really sweet.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So
everybody's doing well. And
yep. Everybody's fine. It's all good. So
good.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
That's awesome.
Well, we are in week two of our sermon series, Family Tree. And week one, Tim was here last week and talked about Abraham. Week two, Dave, you're here this week because you preached on the story of Hagar. And you blamed Tim Ayers for the assignment.
Thanked.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tim, for giving me a real happy character.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So what's kind of the big idea you wanted people to walk away with yesterday or this past weekend?
I think it's the first time I've ever had a big idea that had the word perhaps in it.
Hmm. Yeah.
First time I've ever used that in a big idea.
First time in 40 years.
42 years I've ever used the word perhaps in a big idea.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you know, that's how we preach here, Grace.
We base it
around big ideas. So the big idea was essentially, when you're suffering, or using the word misery, which was the word used to describe Hagar, when you're going through a period of misery and there is no resolution, doesn't appear there's a redemption, and then you're not going to get a reason, perhaps it is enough to know that God sees you and hears you. That was the big idea.
Mm.
So why, this is for both of you, why does the story of Hagar matter? Why is it important that we know this story? Is it because?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, it. That's what a big idea is about, is essentially asking the question, why does this story matter?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're kidding about Tim giving me that story of Hagar, but I mean, she's there for a reason.
Yeah.
It's very, I wouldn't say it's a violent story, but it's an intense story. So it's got to matter for some reason. And there's not much virtuous in the story except for this moment where she comes to the realization and says, wait a minute, did the living one, referring to God, just see me?
Mm-hmm.
And that essentially is the point of the story, I think.
As you were preaching, it hit me. And as I was following through, I was like, Sarah and Abraham, who Hagar is a slave of, they never call her by her name ever in the whole story.
No.
The only person, or God is the only one to call her by her name.
Yeah.
And as you were preaching, I was like, man, maybe that's another reason why this story matters, is because when we feel unseen, and you know, you said, Dave, perhaps it is enough that God sees us. Like, when everybody else doesn't see us, Abraham and Sarah never called her by her name, but God did.
Mm. Yeah.
Does that matter? Is that important?
Yeah. It also reminds us of the universality of God's love, in that she was an Egyptian. She wasn't part of the chosen people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. She was a peripheral to the story of the chosen people. And yet here is God not just noticing her, but sending an emissary on his behalf to speak on his behalf to one who wasn't part of the chosen people.
And to provide for her.
And to provide for her, which is extraordinary.
It's interesting to think, like last week we talked about Abraham, and we're talking about not heroes of the faith, but members of our spiritual family tree.
Lineage, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, last week we're talking about God calling and promising things to Abraham, making, you know, wild promises to him. But this week, Abraham, the father of the family tree, is like super passive and kind of lame in this story.
Yeah. Enabling. And he's an enabler too.
Yeah. I couldn't help but think like if Jesus was in this story, Hagar would be the person that he would be spending time with, not the father of the family tree. I don't know. That struck me as interesting because everybody looks at Abraham like God called him and God called him out of this land and to follow him and made all these promises to him. Yet Jesus, God's son, probably in this story was probably on not on his side. He was on Hagar's side.
Yeah. I mean, let's not, I want to point out that as Tim did, that Abraham did some extraordinary acts of faith.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's a reason why he's in our family tree and we need to pay attention to him. I mean, getting up and going and moving just is an extraordinary thing. And so he rightfully stands at the head.
Yeah, for sure.
At the root of the family tree.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think if Jesus would have shown up in this story as he did 2,000 years later, 2,000 years later, he most likely would have spoken to Abraham the way he spoke to the religious leaders.
Yeah.
Said, you should know better.
Yeah. That stuck out to me for some reason as like a really cool way to think about how Jesus gives us access to Abraham's promises. That God made to Abraham. And Jesus is the one that reconciles the foreigner. Mm-hmm. He's the one that reconciles everybody of every ethnic race, male or female.
Yeah.
And Jesus is the one doing this to bring us into Abraham, like Abraham's family tree. We're all part of this. But in this specific story, Jesus, I feel, would really have empathy for Hagar.
Yep.
It was just, that stood out to me for some reason. Is Hagar the first woman in the Bible that God visits? Like she has a divine encounter with an angel of the Lord. Like, is she the first woman to do that?
You can make a point that Sarah had an encounter with God. Mm. You could make that, you know, but I think in the way you were talking about a divine encounter with an angel, I believe she would be.
Yeah.
Well, there's Eve.
Yeah.
But yeah. She's at least one of the very few at the very beginning that has that kind of encounter.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to think of what comes before this story.
Me too. Well, and there's not much because we have Genesis. I mean, until Genesis 12, there's a lot of things going on that didn't there. I don't know if there's any women mentioned since Eve, was it? Till Genesis 12?
I don't know.
Anyway.
And what I was reading this afternoon is she's the only person in the entire Bible to name God. God usually like names himself or whatever, but she's the only person in the Bible to name God. She made God personal by naming, she's the first person to make him personal by saying, this is God who sees me. Mm-hmm. This is a personal thing. And so asking the question, why does Hagar's story matter? Those are what stood out to me. It's like the fact that, is it enough for God, for us to believe God sees me? Well, if you think about her position, like she was in a position not only of like lesser stature or whatever, but she was the first person, possibly the first woman where God revealed himself through divine encounter. And she's the first person that was so bold to give God a name.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And that story was so important that it was passed down from generation to generation to generation to generation, and eventually into the canon of the Old Testament. So her story stands.
Well, and to think that she was an Egyptian slave, and so the gods that she would have known would have been statues or, you know, shaped after creatures, things found in nature. They would have had names, but they would have been inanimate. They would have been objects. For her to encounter this living, living God who sees her, I mean, had to be mind-blowing for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why do you think Abraham was the way he was in this story? Like, why? He seems so passive, and like Dave, you said, he's like an enabler.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like the Abraham we knew last week and we know would have been like, listen, you did this. Like you, Sarah, did this, not me. But it seems like he's just kind of going with the flow and.
Yeah, abiding. I think we'd have to speculate as to why he was the way he was. I mean, there was cultural precedent for Sarah to hand Hagar to essentially carry his son on her behalf, or her son through this other woman. Mm-hmm. It was still awful. So there was, it's not like it wasn't not done. Let's put it that way. But as for his relationship with Sarah was messed up.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get around that.
Yeah.
Like, what did Sarah say? Let God judge between you and me as to which one's right. Well, I think we know who you think is right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And another thing that stood out to me as you were preaching both hours, I kind of dwelled on the fact that like when the first time the angel of the Lord encounters Hagar, he asks her, where have you come from and where are you going?
Yeah.
And I thought about that. Just, I mean, you could answer that literally. I'm coming from Egypt. I'm going back to Egypt or whatever. Yeah. But I feel like if God's asking you, where have you come from? You're forced to face all of the mess that you've been through. You're like, here's everything.
Yeah.
Where are you going? You have a choice now to follow me because, you know, where are you going? You have a path that I'm calling you to. That stood out to me too. I was like, that's a pretty deep question. If you look beyond just the like geography of where you're coming from, where are you going?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like he forced her to sit in her misery.
Yeah.
And to process it and be mindful of what was going on inside of her.
Yeah. In the second hour, you said that you struggle with that. You're like, I shake my head at him calling her back to misery. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Return to your mistress.
Yeah. Yeah. Return to your mistress. And the word, the Hebrew word return is essentially the same thing as the word that was used to describe misery. So return to your misery or go back there and submit to that misery again. I just shake my head at it. Cause it doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel right in any way. Mm-hmm. And we could speculate and think, you know, what was God doing? Obviously, was he seeing the end from the beginning and what was he trying to do in her life or Abraham and Sarah's life and all those things? I'm sure all those played into it. But again, we don't get descriptions between the verses. We don't get a lot sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so we're left speculating. But I'm not going to sit back and go, well, that made perfect sense because it doesn't make sense to me as a human being.
Yeah. Yeah, that was tough. After you said, I shake my head at that. I was like, why would he shake his? Oh, it's because it seems like God's calling her back to
misery.
Misery, yeah. And that.
I'm going to play the why game, but why didn't God say, okay, and I'm going to support you and you're going to be fine from this point on.
Yeah.
So, and that's okay. I personally, even though I shake my head at it, that whole idea of embracing the mystery of how God works with us and how works in our lives. Mm-hmm. I'll take that over certainty any day.
Yeah.
Certainty would be great, but I'll take the mystery.
Yeah, like you said, had she not gone back, she wouldn't have had the second experience. Mm-hmm. The first one is the God who sees me. Second one is the God who hears. That happens the second time she gets sent away.
Yeah, but she's drawn into a place where her son almost dies.
Right.
And she's, I mean, and again, I said this in the sermon too, I think, man, what we don't see is the years worth of emotional trauma.
Yeah.
And the scars that this woman and her son has to deal with. Mm-hmm. I mean, forever. I wonder if that's why Ishmael became a man who shook his fist at everyone and everyone shook their fist, because he became bitter and angry.
Yeah.
I'm kind of don't blame him, but
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah, we almost died of thirst. Remember that, Mom?
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad sent me away.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does it mean to you guys? Like, Dave, if you're saying this is the first time I've ever said perhaps this is enough, like, what does that mean to you guys? Is it enough for you guys to, I don't know, if I assume you guys have experienced misery. Is it enough for you to believe that God sees you and hears you?
Sometimes. I think my answer would be yes and no. You know, in the misery that I've experienced, you wonder why, okay, if you see me and you hear me, why aren't you causing the situation to end in a favorable result? Mm-hmm. You know, that went through my head a lot, obviously, as I was losing my mom. I mean, she's a believing woman, and our whole family and everyone that we knew was praying that the situation would end a different way. Mm-hmm. So I knew that he saw me and I knew that he heard me, but I knew that he was sovereign and it might not end the way that I'm hoping it will end. It might not turn out the way I'm hoping it will turn out. And it didn't. So he's the God who saw me and he's the God who heard me. But I think for some people, they'll say, well, if you see me and if you hear me, why aren't you doing anything?
Yeah. That's the question I wrote down. Yeah.
Right.
But I think my answer to the question is yes, but not always.
Yeah.
In other words, it has been helpful to me. And more often than not, because I know not all pain and suffering is going to be explained. Mm-hmm. It has been, and over the last 2 years, especially, it has been very helpful for me. It's almost like I can inevitably see myself over the last 2 years sitting with God and getting to the place where I say, your presence, that's all I'm going to get. Mm. And that's okay with me. That's okay with me.
And your grace is sufficient then. If your presence is all I'm going to get, that is all I need.
Well, Brendan Manning said, when we experience the enormity of God and his presence, he said, it awakens a dormant trust. Mm-hmm. I love that phrase. And ever since I read it the first time many years ago, it awakens a dormant trust. It's almost like, okay, it is okay for me, because somehow I haven't been able to generate this trust from my own mind and will, but your presence has awakened it in me.
Yeah.
And I'll go on one step further. I think I said this in the sermon. I said, one of the things this sermon did for me and is remind me what I've been going through the last 2 years as I have been rehearsing so many conversations I had with people over 42 years of pastoral ministry. And I clearly remember early on wanting to help people, almost forcing situations for there to be a reason, there to be redemption, and there to be resolution. And somewhere along the way, I don't know when or what Rubicon I crossed, but somewhere along the way, I realized I can't do that every time because it's just not true.
Yeah.
And so what do I have? What do I have to offer this person who is in absolute misery? Well, all I have is, here's the presence of God. Perhaps you can experience his presence. Mm-hmm. So that was really important.
I've had a couple tough weeks. And resolution and redemption in particular, in a particular personal matter, would help me immensely. And it's been my prayer. Okay. I'm like praying for resolution. I'm praying for redemption in specific situations. Is it okay to pray for these things, or should we be praying that it is enough that God hears us and sees us, or that we feel that. Like, is it okay to pray for the resolution?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, throughout the story of God, we have stories of people who experienced resolution, asked for it and received it, mm-hmm. who received redemption, asked for it and received it, and got reasons, asked for it and received it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But the question is, when you don't get that, in the event that those three things don't happen to you, is it enough? Perhaps it is enough to know that God hears and sees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when I'm thinking over the story of Hagar, she got to experience a divine encounter two times, a life-changing divine encounter with the living God. Something that she wasn't expecting, something that was so remarkable. She named the moment, she named God, she named the experience. I think that even more than a resolution would be what I would want. I don't think it's wrong to pray for the resolution, but I don't want to miss the experience, you know, white knuckling my prayers and holding my breath, hoping, you know, to skip to the end. And I want the resolution. I want the end result. What would I be missing? Mm. Is there an experience in the suffering, in the misery? And I would say in all of my experiences, plural, with misery in its various forms, there's almost always been at least one of those moments, those divine moments, like you said, or like Brennan Manning said, that awakens that dormant trust. I don't think I live in that moment every moment of misery when I'm in a season of misery, but with each one, when my sister lost her firstborn, I can point to a divine moment where it reawakened that trust. Mm-hmm. And even though the result
in you,
in me, in my sister, in my mom, and we didn't all experience it collectively, but we each had our own experiences of processing this misery and this suffering and this grief. And it was so nonsensical. You're never going to make sense of why this happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were praying for an end that didn't come, but we each had an encounter with the living God during and in the midst of misery and trial.
Is patience, should we be hoping for patience? Like, what should we be hoping for? Like, if we're stuck in misery.
Well, I think the story of Hagar, by the very fact that it happened the way it did to her, I don't think we have that story to hold out and say she was special. She got something that you can never have. I think the story is there to remind us that when there is not a resolution, when there's not a reason, and when there's not redemption, Hagar's story tells us that it is possible that something can happen to you that's transformative. And the knowledge of that story, I think, can hopefully create a sense of patience in us that says, all right, if nothing else, give me you, Father. Give me you. So I think that's one of the reasons why a story is there, is actually to create a sense of patience and expectation that in my misery, all is not lost. I will at least experience the presence of God. Does that sound right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Give me you. It would be great if you would give me you and the end result I want.
Yeah.
But should that not happen, give me you, because I know that you will get me through if it doesn't end the way that I want. I know that you will comfort my grieving heart. I know that you are still a provider. I know, you know, all of those things. Just, you are my sufficiency, so give me you. It would be also super great if...
that's super hard, man. Like, you have to rise above a lot. You have to rise above... so much to get to a point where you're not praying about the thing anymore. You're praying about, give me you.
Yeah.
And that takes that takes a level of patience and faith and confidence in God that is way easier said than done, I think.
Well, and it's incumbent on God himself to actually, he's the one who's going to do the work of showing up so that you can name him.
Yeah.
So I don't want us to do the thing that we always do as Christians. And that is what am I supposed to do with this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then I have another layer of responsibility that I'm inevitably going to fail at. Mm. So let's put the burden where God took the burden upon himself to say, I will show up so that you can sense the living one sees you. I think that's part of the story too.
Yeah, I agree.
And we just have this tendency of just blaming ourselves for everything.
Yeah.
And taking the responsibility on ourselves when God says, I will take some responsibility here.
That's good. I do think it requires us to know or to understand the power of what it means for the living God to see you.
Mm-hmm. And remind ourselves when we are helping each other through misery to ask questions like, are you experiencing God? Mm-hmm. What might you be hearing? Not how can we get you through this?
Yeah.
Yeah. You said, remind me what you said about like just opening the shade to let the glory of God peer into a dark situation.
Yeah. That's actually literally what I said. I think for each other, if we can lift the shade a bit.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't know how to prescribe that. When we're with our loved ones and our friends, if we can somehow let the glory, the kabod, which is that Hebrew word, which means enormously heavy and blinding light at the same time. If we could open the shade a bit to experience that, I think that would help. Now, side note, what I have found over the last couple of years, there's been so much soul searching going on over the last 2 years. My gosh, don't get me started on that. But one of the things I've noticed is the songs, I should say this to you, Maren, because the songs that you, many times you choose, the ones that have been most meaningful to me and the ones that inevitably take me to tears are not what I would call the experiential song, How Loved I Am, the songs that bring me to tears are the songs that immediately portray the enormity of God.
I agree.
And I can't help, but it's like when I see how big he is, how huge he is, how weighty he is, how blinding light, I cannot not cry.
Yeah.
It's like you or the song helps pull up the shade a bit on the brilliance, hugeness of God. It's why we worship when we're in misery. Mm. Who in their right mind, in all our misery, would put ourselves at a place singing Christian happy music? We don't want to do that. But I want to be in a place where we're winning all the time, right? That's what a lot of churches are. You know, where you go and get your TED Talk and your Coldplay concert.
Yeah.
A lot of churches are like that.
Maren's like, that sounds nice.
I was like, whoa, he just said that.
Yeah, but that's what a lot of churches are. But
come on.
Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, I need to be in a place where somebody pulls the shade up and I see the enormity of God.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
I agree.
Sorry, I just went off for a second.
You did. I was like, does that make me Chris Martin? Am I the lead singer of Coldplay?
Hey, Coldplay's good. And it's,
I would not. Yeah, I would. That was probably over the top.
Sorry, man. You're semi-retired.
Barry, I'm so sorry.
Hey, he's not listening. He's gone for like another 3 months.
It's no, I am struck by what you said. I agree with you. I cannot count how many songs I have sung in the church through the years, over the years. And I'm always looking for the ones that just turn our attention toward the magnitude, the magnificence, the glory of God. Ones that just exalt his lordship and exalt him, that have less to do with what he does for me and more to do with who he is and what he is.
And amen. That's where I am right now. I could sing those kind of songs and I roll my eyes. And I heard a song was traveling with our older adopted grandkids, and we were listening. We were listening to Christian radio, and a song came on that was chronicling all the miracles. We've seen God do this. We've seen all this. We've seen this. We've seen all these. And I know the purpose of this. I know what the song's about. We sing them here at Grace too. Mm-hmm. The purpose is to encourage me that God may yet do something because we've seen him do the past, but I found myself empty listening to it. And I thought, what is this song teaching these three kids? Mm-hmm. Would it not be better? And this is, again, I'm being very prescriptive, and forgive me for that. But what would be better for those kids if they could not sit in the enormity of God instead?
Or both.
Both. Or at least have a balance.
Yeah.
That the reason why we can expect God to act is because he created all things. Mm-hmm. I saw a picture. Neil deGrasse Tyson posted a picture of Mercury in front of the sun.
The planet?
The planet Mercury in front of the sun. And when I looked at it, you couldn't even see Mercury. It was like a pixel error in the picture. It was so teeny. And it immediately made me think of the enormity of God. And for that, I was glad. That's important.
Yeah.
And the living one sees me. This enormous one sees me.
I thought about that, like, last week they just like found the bottom of the ocean or something.
Hey, look there.
They found it.
What's that?
Well, they went deeper than they've ever gone before or something.
Was there a sign?
Yeah, this is as deep as it's ever been. Yeah. But that made me think of, or maybe it was an old video, I don't know, but that made me think of the same thing. Like, I don't like going like 6 feet deep. I can't imagine
the dark waters.
How small I am compared to the magnificence of God.
Yeah. And it's a terrifying thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They found like clear animals down there.
Did they?
Like translucent.
They took pictures of them.
Yeah. Translucent. Wait,
how could they see them?
They had lights. It was translucent like cucumbers.
Oh. And
so down in the bottom of the ocean are translucent cucumbers.
Delicious, yeah. Oceanic.
No, not those kind of cucumbers.
I'm making it what I want it to be in my mind.
Okay. Maren, what are we doing next? What's happening?
Who's preaching next?
Yeah, where we go?
Well, happy early Father's Day, everybody. It'll be Father's Day weekend. It'll be June 19th, Juneteenth, our newest federal holiday, I believe.
Yeah.
And Amy is bringing us a message about Isaac.
Whoa. All right. So she's going to want to come on the show.
The other child.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Half brother.
Half brother.
That's right.
Half brother Isaac.
Wonder if they got along.
He will surprise you.
Amy will be here.
Amy will be here.
Yeah. Okay, good. So, Dave, thank you for being here.
Oh, you're welcome. It's good to be here.
Hopefully, are you preaching again this summer?
Yeah, I got a happier person.
Good.
In July, I'm talking about Joseph.
Okay, good.
But Tim gave me...
He went through some
gird
stuff.
Gird your loins.
Yeah. Well, the notes he gave us, it said in the middle of his suffering. And I thought, I'm not talking about that.
Can we stop?
No, Tim. No.
I'm going to find something incredible about him. So I'm actually thinking about talking about how a person maintains integrity.
Oh, okay.
What does integrity look like over a lifetime?
I saw Dave in the bathroom on Sunday and he said to me, not going to have any sound bites for you this week. I was like, challenge accepted. But then I was like, yeah, this is sad stuff. I don't want to do sound bites about any of this. So, yeah.
Wild donkey child. That wasn't good enough.
I thought about that, but we've got a lot of donkey clips already.
I turned to my daughter and said, I had one of those once.
A wild donkey child?
She's my wild donkey child.
Donkeys out of your chickpeas.
We've already got donkey
what
content.
What's that from?
Something Barry said one time.
Recently. He said that recently.
Yeah.
Donkeys out of your chickpeas.
Okay. I don't get it.
I don't either. Yeah.
I don't get it at all. But anyway.
All right. So Amy will be here next week. And then Maren, you're up after that.
So help me.
So it'll just be me and you. One-on-one.
So help me, guys.
Hard-hitting interview.
Wait, who are you? who are you preaching on?
I got Jacob.
All right. Which part of that story are you going to
God
take?
Rules.
Well, I don't know. I can't give it away on the pod yet.
Oh.
I have what you have. Like
that's
the
code
same,
for I don't know yet.
No, we both got this. Yeah. We got this sermon series overview that Tim wrote up that suggested, because again, you take the life of someone like Abraham.
Yeah.
Like, and you got 30 minutes.
Yeah,
what
right.
part of Abraham's mm-hmm. life do you talk about? So there's mm-hmm. all different slices of Jacob's life that we could talk about, or Isaac's life. And I got the slice that Tim suggested. Oh, woo. It's going to take a lot of studying. Oof. I got to get through kids camp.
All right, good. Yeah. Got to do that first. We didn't even talk about your son's graduation party. We'll do that next time.
Sure. Sure. Right. I'm on the other side of it and it's good. The grass is green.
Okay, good. All right. You're
and
coming up for air.
Thank you both for coming.
Yeah,
it's
good
to be
time.
There. Thank you for having us.
All right, Maren, will you please send us out?
I will. Do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God.
And we'll see you on the other side of Sunday.